Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Tungi Chow. Tungi is the CEO and co-founder of Paxton.ai, a legal AI assistant, as a tool I'm using almost every day in my business. I was thrilled he agreed to come on the show. We discuss what Paxton does for lawyers and the services we provide, and what it means for the future of legal services, and why billing time doesn't make sense in that future. Longtime listeners know I've been releasing videos of my podcast to all of my Substack subscribers. Go to lawsubscribe.com and join the Substack using the form on the homepage. I'm speaking at ABA Tech Show in Chicago this February of 2024, where I'll be presenting on generative AI and the subscription model and podcasting for lawyers. Register for that at techshow.com. Thanks, as always, to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel. Links to both in the show notes. More on them later. And remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast. You get 10% off, and it really supports the show. Another way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Tungi Chow with Paxton.ai. Founder and CEO, I'm so excited to have you here. I am using Paxton in my practice, and we've had a few opportunities to talk. But just in case my listeners haven't heard about you, please introduce yourself.
Perfect. Thank you, Matthew. And we're so happy to connect with you. You have been there since the beginning of Paxton. I remember our conversations. This was already like a few months ago when we were just a tiny little team, and then now we're just building so rapidly. So Paxton AI is a generative AI legal and regulatory assistant. What sets us apart is that we are not built on top of OpenAI or other types of LLMs. What's happening here is we directly connect to the primary sources of information and pull all of the statutes, rules, regulations, court rulings, SEC filings from governmental agencies and websites. The body of knowledge now is close to about 150 million documents that are constantly being updated. And we use these public documents to train our own language models. And the result is that Paxton has a direct understanding of primary law. And then we're making our way down to understanding like secondary law as well. But, you know, this is a long process for us.
Yeah, I remember when we first chatted, at the time, Paxton had been trained on all U.S. federal laws. And at the time of recording, it's been trained on all state laws, which is really a fascinating thing, because for me, I was able to query Paxton about a complicated research issue that I had to solve for a client really even last year. And some of these other AI platforms didn't quite get there without multiple different types of prompting and very particular prompts. And I just had to fall back on traditional legal research to get the right answer for sure. But Paxton got it like right away, which was unbelievable for me, because also that wasn't what I was being told that the tool was necessarily made for, but it worked. And so it was sort of like a light bulb moment for me, because I'm playing with all the AI tools out there. I've even also interviewed some other ones on the podcast, not live at the time of recording. But right away, like Paxton for me stood out as a super useful tool, because you could also upload documents to it. And like your documents are the source of truth, are the data, are the facts that you could query Paxton about, which immediately, in my opinion, sort of set it apart. I'm curious to know, is my experience unique in that regard, or what have you heard from other lawyers and other users of your platform? Have they had similar type of experiences, and what have they been saying?
Yeah, I think in a crowded legal AI environment, we really stand out. We really stand out because we're doing something that's extremely difficult. You're going to see a lot of tools that are like wrappers around like OpenAI, and that's, you know, and it provides value on its own. The idea of collecting 150 million documents and then to train your own models, so Paxton understands like when you're writing like a motion to dismiss, it knows like what a motion to dismiss is supposed to look like, right? Like these are things that whether you're talking about OpenAI or Claude or Anthropic, like they're not built for that. And so when you're using a tool that is specific to an industry, you need to go much deeper into the vertical and train a language model on the specific needs of that industry. And look, it's extremely difficult to do from a technical perspective. It's also extremely painful to do to collect all of the law. It's a lot of work, but it's work that if you look at Google, like Google searches the entire internet every single day, mm-hmm. right? For us, it's a subset of that. So from a technical perspective, the problem has been solved. It's just difficult to do and it's painful to do, but the problem has been solved.
I could just like go right into the deep end with you all day about this stuff, but let's just for my listeners, like let's see, give them just like a little bit more, even like a background and like, how did Paxton even like come to be? Like why legal tech? Like why did you start this company? And maybe as part of that, talk about how you were able to train these models and why not use OpenAI?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I'm an engineer by training. I did my master, my PhD, my MBA at MIT. But what really sets me and Mike apart is that as engineers, we've actually been in the legal tech field and the regulatory field for a large portion of our career. Mike, my co-founder, started his career as a regulator for the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, where he was providing the bank's feedback on the Wall Street Reform Act. And I, on my side, you know, had a career in venture capital before, where I was the lead seed investor in a $4 billion legal tech company called Ironclad. So this is something that for the last decade, I've been very close to. And separately, I also serve the chief compliance officer for an investment management firm. So I'm registered under the SEC. I hold a FINRA Series 65 investment advisory law license. So yes, we're engineers, but we're special engineers because we've been thrown with the problems of legal and compliance for the last decade. And so that's really what brought us into this space. We saw the opportunity from a technological perspective of having these new large language models. But we also saw the opportunity and looking at law and as one of the industry that has a lot of inefficiencies in there. There's not a lot of software penetration in the industry, at least until more recently. And so it creates massive opportunities, such as, you know, Ironclad being a $4 billion company, or here, Paxton, you know, building something that is very, very special.
When you're talking about a lot of inefficiencies, you know, you're speaking my language, right? Because after all, I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe that if we change the business model of law, the way that lawyers make money, we are incentivized to get rid of those efficiencies. And that's where a tool like Paxton really comes into play. So I'm not going to keep my audience waiting because this is sort of why they tune in. So like, what have been your thoughts then around now you have this tool and you're coming from Ironclad, which primarily sells to in-house teams, right? Where like, they're not worried about the billable hour. They're worried about how can we cut our legal costs and make it as efficient as possible inside this business to manage our contracts, right? Realizing that, look, there are some law firms that just, even if they refuse to stop billing their time, there's a glut of associates to hire, and it's highly competitive in terms of pay. And it's just going to be cheaper to just use a tool like Paxton whenever you guys finally decide to start charging something, because right now you're still a free beta. Depending on when this goes live, maybe you won't be anymore. So, I mean, I understand and appreciate that you're probably going to also want to be selling this to billable hour firms. But what is your perspective on how Paxton eliminates so much of what used to be, or what it can potentially eliminate so much of what is currently billable time?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, when you look at the industry generally, there are inefficiencies in terms of business model inefficiencies, and there are technical inefficiencies. Mm-hmm. I think that if you look at over the next decade, there will be changes and an adjustment on business model side as well. But what we are focusing on is really solving the technical inefficiencies. And then the technical inefficiencies, those two changes that you are seeing, whether business model or technical efficiencies, operate at different pace and different scale. A business model change might take 5 to 10 years to happen. The technical inefficiencies right now, like whichever firm is going to adopt AI soonest has an incredible advantage over the other ones. And that's what we're really focusing on, solving the technical inefficiencies and to make the work, you know, faster, better, easier. What we are seeing and hearing also from in-house counsels that are, some of them are using the tools, is that they actually would want to ask their outside firms more work, right? They want to do more work, but they have a mandate by their CEOs to keep legal costs under a certain budget or to reduce some of the legal costs. And so they're not actually asking and giving the full scope of business to their external counsels because of, you know, business model inefficiencies and because of how expensive it is.
Yeah. So I think that you went in a totally different direction than I thought you were going to go. But I think that's a really similar to that, I think, is the fact that when you remove those technical inefficiencies, you could really grow your client base, even if your clients are not in-house teams at larger companies, right? Because now you can significantly grow the amount of people that you're able to serve, because I'm not so much worried about competition with other lawyers, whether or not they're using AI, because the market that I see so much market potential with people who could afford to pay lawyers something, but can't afford an unknown price at the end of legal services because they don't know how long something's going to take. But I think the point that you raised is a really important one. And I really want to now share this episode with some lawyer coaches who I know who help lawyers pitch themselves to in-house counsel teams or to CEOs, because they're like, well, hey, if we're not billing our time because we're using a tool like Paxton, now we could be super efficient. You could send us more work. And the subscription model would help keep that relationship in a virtuous cycle. Right? Because now they're giving more work. The lawyers are able to do it more quickly because they're incentivized to do it more quickly because they're not billing their time anymore. And a tool like Paxton sort of makes it a no-brainer. Have you seen anything else, like in the like as you've now been in this legal tech space, where you're seeing any other pushback from lawyers or other generative AI companies that are, or just AI companies in general in legal tech space, that are, you know, saying that the end of the billable hour is the end is nigh and it's soon to be over? Have you come across anything like that? Or are you just so focused in on just building an excellent product that you haven't seen anything like that yet?
Yeah, I mean, our focus as builders is really to get feedback from our users to understand how to make the product better. How to make it easier for people to adopt it. That's really is our focus. And we see that. And I think hopefully you see this in the evolution of Paxton over the last few months, at the pace at which we are building and the advantage that we have being a small startup and saying, like, look, we put the product out there, go on Paxton.ai, use it. You don't even need to have an account. You can use it as a visit, as an unsigned, as a visitor and experience it. And you will see just how quickly these technologies are evolving. I think it's very important to understand that what's happening lies on an exponential curve. We've seen an exponential decrease in the cost of semiconductor transistors that drove like massive growth in, you know, what are now like our iPhones, starting from mainframe computers to now our iPhones. Yeah. We've seen the same thing happen in the cost of DNA sequencing that just rapidly decreased and unlocked an entire new industry around genetic testing. The same thing is happening right now around artificial intelligence and our ability to build larger and larger models that are more intelligent, that ingest more information, that have larger context windows. That, you know, I can't even tell you where we're going to be in 12 months. It's impossible given how quickly, from a technological perspective, this is moving.
Yeah. It reminds, you know, like the exponential growth curve, right? It's, I wish I was better prepared to give a specific example, but essentially, you know, like how many times, you know, do you need to fold a piece of paper over, you know, to double it in size? And it's less than you think to wrap around the whole world. And most of it is like in the last two or three folds that you do, right? Like it's like actually a lower number than you think because humans have trouble with exponential growth. So who knows? Like it could be next week that all of a sudden AI is sentient, right? Like, I mean, not, I don't think so. But the rate of change is pretty phenomenal. Have you found like your initial vision for the company that like you had to pivot from what you thought Paxton was going to be used for? And then when your users started using it, like you said, you're listening to your users. Like, in what ways has your vision shifted? Or were you more cemented in like, yes, this was our vision and this is what the end users want?
Yeah. So, I mean, a startup always pivots. These are micro adjustments, constant micro adjustments. It's like sailing. You are constantly trimming the sail, right? When we set out originally, we were looking to build like a compliance solution, legal and regulatory compliance solution specifically for in-house teams. And, you know, so we started Paxton in that direction. But what we came to realize after many conversations is that there's so many more people that can benefit from this and that are faster to adopt and that are giving us feedback on, you know, on a weekly basis. We now have, you know, thousands of lawyers that are using Paxton every single day. Yeah. And so our decision was, look, instead of getting tied down into long sales cycle, enterprise sales cycles, let's just put this tool and make it available to everyone. And what inspired us to do this and to push that adoption within the industry was very simply, it's very similar to what happened with the adoption of cloud storage technologies over a decade ago, right? When cloud storage became available, you had two different business models. You had Box, where you had to have like enterprise sales model. And then you had another MIT company named Dropbox, where you could go on the website, download it, test out the tool. And then you saw like the adoption was so much faster when you adopted a product-led growth and put the tool, make the tool available to anyone that is wants to use it and wants to try it. And that's one big adjustment that we have made. But I think that has allowed us to grow the number of users and to get rapid feedback, which is really like how a startup company succeeds. It's like, how quickly do you get feedback on your product? How quickly do you iterate? And how short are your cycles?
Right. So like, you know, your Dropbox style company, like if you look at that playbook, right? So eventually, so those of us who are using Paxton now every day, eventually it'll be like, you know, so many prompts, or maybe you can only upload and query so many documents. And then if you want to go past that, there'll be like a subscription pricing, sort of like what Dropbox is doing. Is that what's on the horizon for Paxton, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a business, we can only stay in business as long as we need to be able to generate revenues. Like, right. You know, we've closed a very significant round of financing, so we're good for a big chunk of time. But at some point, you know, my investors are going to say, well, how do you turn this into something that is self-sustaining? And so our goal is to identify what are individual use cases versus what are use cases that are reflective of a large organization. So for example, if you're building your own database within Paxton and you ask Paxton to search through your own 100,000 documents, which is, by the way, 100,000 documents is very small for us. Like, we're searching through 100 million documents from that we curate. So you can put anything you want in there. But that would be, and you're building this database of 100,000 documents and you want to share it with multiple users. That is a use case that is reflective of an organization use. And if we are in fact building value for the organization, it's normal that the organization would then, you know, be able to pay for the use. And so that's what we're trying to understand at this moment.
Right. Right. And so that begs the question then for discerning attorneys who may be uploading documents to this, they're thinking, well, hey, you know, is it training on my confidential client data? And can that, if I were to put in a contract into Paxton, or a document with confidential client data, then can somebody else who's using Paxton, you know, somewhere else, inadvertently or intentionally pull that data? How are you handling that type of thing?
Yeah, so that's a really important question, and it's a very clear answer. The answer is absolutely not. There's zero, absolutely zero, zero training on, you know, user documents. All of the documents that you upload to Paxton are private and encrypted to your user and your user only. In fact, it's so important for us that, you know, the way that the level of security that we abide by is the same level of security that, you know, we use Google data centers, or in some enterprise deployment that use Azure, we use Azure data center. It's the same thing as running an application on top of like your Azure email server where a document might reside. But in the end, it is secured and stored in an encrypted form on a Microsoft or Google or Amazon data center, depending on the type of deployments. But again, absolutely no training on internal, on user documents. Yeah, all of the training happens with documents that we collect externally that are public documents from, you know, the 100 to 150 million documents that we have collected that are public documents.
Right. So now let's move into like the platform itself, right? So when I think when I first saw it, there might have only been like two, maybe three tabs of like, you know, query about laws or regulations and upload a document that might have even been consolidated at the time, and like the how-to tab, right? But now I've got Paxton open while we've got the interview going here, and you've got laws and regulations, and I see now you could select your source. And if you click on that, you could pick whatever your jurisdiction is. And I see here you've got administrative codes, court rules, statutes, revised statutes, depending on the jurisdiction, which is a big development. Case law now, and I'll ask you specifically about that later. We've got SEC EDGAR, which is another very recent announcement at the time of recording. Analyzing files and videos, comparing documents, and Boolean Composer. So I'm sure like this isn't meant to be like a demo of the product, right? But in particular, I did just query it, a query of a question I got from a client very recently about whether or not they should, as a new business, which just them, when they make their first hire, which they're thinking about hiring, should it be a full-time employee or an independent contractor? So I queried it about that. And I got several bullet points. I queried it on Illinois law in the United States. And I have multiple references as a result of that for where it's getting its recommendations from. I'm also getting follow-up questions, which I think is a really important thing, because some of these other AI tools that are out there don't let you do like sequential prompting or follow-up questions to a previous prompt. So first of all, I love that part of it, probably, you know, but also like, why, like, how did you come to that design choice, and why do you allow those types of things? And like, how do you come up with the questions to ask? Because they're very good questions.
Yeah. So I think you had multiple questions.
Sorry about that. No, just take it in any direction that you want. I was making a lot of observations first for the listeners who might not have played with Paxton yet, but feel free to touch on anything.
So one thing that I want to emphasize is that whatever Paxton returns, you know, we believe in the trust but verify mantra, right? Whatever Paxton returns is every sentence or paragraph has a footnote where you can see which information and which document and which statutes Paxton used in order to provide its answer. I think that's really important. And then from there, you can see the language and then click on a link and be taken directly to the source where the information came from. So you know that, one, this is not a hallucination, that it is in fact grounded in specific laws. And then two, that those laws are the most up-to-date statutes, rules, and regulations. So that's one thing. You also asked about the follow-up questions. And the reason why we had these follow-up questions is we realized that when people are adopting new AI tools, sometimes it's not clear what can you do with an AI system. And so we thought, okay, well, a follow-up question based on the query that was just asked and the knowledge that we have shows you like all of the things that you can do, that you can ask. And so that's where this feature came from. At this moment, I'm willing to share with you some of the things that are coming down the pipeline.
Yes, please do.
The chat functionality of being able to ask Paxton, hey, can you provide this answer? And then Paxton is going to respond and say, okay, how was this? How do I improve it? You know, what do I need? Is the language correct? Is the language not correct? Do you need a longer analysis, a shorter analysis? All of that is something that we're working on and that I expect will be released before the podcast is out. So okay. by the time your listeners listen to this podcast, I would say, go look at Paxton. It probably is by now already a fully conversational assistant that seeks feedback and tells you, okay, you know, is this good? Is it like, how do I improve my answer in a conversational way? That's a really big lift for our engineering team. And I'm so grateful of the team that we're working with.
Yeah. And I'm thrilled to hear that. And I'm so excited because that's really the future of these tools, right? Is like when I go and talk to law schools and I tell the students about Paxton, because I do, because it's an incredible tool. I tell them that I, as a solo practitioner, don't need to hire an associate right now because I could just go to Paxton. And that's at Paxton's current development. But when I'm actually able to have a conversation with Paxton, like I'd have with an associate, you know, here's this document, summarize this document for me. And then an associate might come back with questions, right? Now the associate is going to make mistakes. So even if the AI makes mistakes, I still think the AI is going to make fewer mistakes than a human first year associate, right? But the things that you're missing from that associate is the associate could ask clarifying questions, follow-up questions. So it sounds like what Paxton is going in that direction, which makes me even more excited. But what I also tell the law students is, it's okay. Don't be afraid of this tool. Learn how to use it. And then when they hire you and you know how to use this tool, you will be the equivalent of a 5-year associate when you first get started. Because now you'll have access and you'll be able to conduct analysis that you never would have been able to conduct in your first year using a tool like this. So I really don't think they have to worry about jobs in that regard. But for now, like just also for my audience again, because they're not listening to this, they're going to ask their own questions, query in Paxton. I do want to tell them, when I asked about the employment, should I hire full-time or independent contractor for the first employee, here are some of the follow-up questions that it recommends, which I think are really important for the listeners to hear. What are the key differences in tax obligations when hiring an employee versus a contractor? What benefits would a full-time employee be eligible for that a contractor would not? How can an employer ensure a contractor is properly classified to avoid a misclassification issue, which is a big problem in employment law? Pros and cons of using a staffing agency or a PEO instead of hiring the employee directly. Really great question. And what legal considerations should an Illinois employer review before making their first hire? So all of these things are like, this is what lawyers are paid the big bucks for, like to issue spot. And here, a client came to me with a question. I would eventually come up with these questions on my own to ask him and to figure out and answer for him. But this tool did it for me with the initial prompt, right? So like just like the power of a tool like this, it's not, I don't see it as replacing lawyers, because I know, because I'm a trained attorney and a licensed attorney, that these are all great follow-up questions to ask and issues to spot, right? And so again, more of just an observation, Tungi, but I just thought it was important for the audience to listen to that and hear that. If there's any, if you do have any comments on that of like how is it that Paxton's able to issue spot so well? I guess maybe my audience would be interested in hearing that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, something that I want to emphasize on your last comment is human judgment will always be in the loop. It's inevitable. And this is not a replacement for human judgment. This is a tool that accelerates and facilitates legal research. And so, you know, just like you can do legal research without using the internet, right? Like in the next 10 years, you will be able to do legal research the good old way if you want to. I don't know why you would, you know, but this is a tool that accelerates and makes your legal research more faster, more efficient, more accurate, that gives you that makes you think about what are other considerations that I should be aware of. And yeah, and maybe the analogy here is when the spreadsheets were invented, you know, people were like, we saw a decrease in number of bookkeeper, but those bookkeeper became accountants. So it's a shift within the work that we all do. So it's saying like there are certain things that AI systems are going to be really good at, and searching through 150 million documents and accurately retrieving the needle in a haystack amongst a massive amount of knowledge within 5 seconds is something that an AI system is really good at. Right. There are things that humans are really good at that AI is not good at: applying human judgment, the question of moral and ethics. You know, I think these are things where, you know, human judgment will not be replaced. And so there's a shift of what do you ask a lawyer to do and what do you ask an AI assistant to do? And the research part, I think, is something that an AI assistant will do really well. The judgment part and the client relationships is not something that an AI is going to be able to do.
Right. I mean, it's so easy to see how a tool like this could also be applied to like medicine, right?
Law and medicine are really important industries, but that traditionally haven't really had big adoption of software technologies. Mm-hmm.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. Another feature of Paxton that is like really cool, and I'm interested to know why you decided to even do this, because I have not seen this other places. Maybe it is other places now, but the video feature, you could add a YouTube link and now you can query Paxton on that YouTube video. So like, and it doesn't have to be for legal stuff. Like I even threw in like a news video and I was like, summarize this news video for me. So I don't have to listen to a 30-minute video on the news and I can just read a few paragraphs on the updates. You know, how does that even work? Like, is it just like all YouTube videos have captions? And so like it reads the captions, like, is that how it works? Or is it some other way? And then what drove you to make that sort of a design choice? Because I think it's super useful.
Yeah, so at the time of recording, it's YouTube videos, but obviously we're working to be able to probably at the time it's published, you'll be able to put not just YouTube links, but like audio files, video files, and Paxton is able to use that as sources of knowledge. And the reason why we did this was, again, user requests. People wanted to be able to understand things like, and to be able to search through things like agency hearing, congressional hearings that may affect their industry, or to start searching through depositions or deposition videos. And now the second part of your question was, how does it work? And so currently, Paxton listens to the video, transcribes it through a speech-to-text transcription, and then searches through the transcription. So we're working so in the future, it's not just the voice and the sound of the video, but the images also that you would be able to search through. But that's not something that we that we've done yet. But yeah. But that's on the roadmap.
Yeah, yeah. I would understand why you don't need to do that a lot sooner, because like that's if things go to trial and you know are doing an investigation. Like I could see how that could be super useful on the image side, but it, like the vast majority of what we do as lawyers is text based. So yeah, that's really interesting. Now, is that when they refer to AI being multimodal, is that like, you know, or is multimodal the output? Is it just the input or the output when multimodal is used?
We've got to a point where it's multimodal input and outputs. And so being able to feed in images, videos, and then or to ask AI to start drawing images or create videos as well. I mean, here I'm talking from a technology perspective, not like what Paxson is using, but yeah. And not just one, but just to be able to say like, look at this text and those images and look at the body of knowledge across both. So it's not just one or the other.
Right. I mean, the tool I used to edit this podcast is called Descript, and it's an AI powered tool. And I think OpenAI actually invested heavily in them and started to integrate their tools into Descript. I didn't notice it got better. But what it does is it takes a video or audio file and it transcribes it, and it lets you edit the transcript, and then it automatically does the video and audio editing when you just like edit words like in a text document. So it makes anyone who could edit a Word document able to have a podcast or be a video editor, right? It's pretty incredible software. And the transcripts are like 90% correct on the first go. Because it's a generative model, you could say, do it again and fix your errors. And then it gets to like 96% correct. So I have to imagine whatever you're using is like a similar type thing to transcribe these, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, there continues to be improvements on speech to text transcription and things like that. But like, it's so accurate.
Like I know that there's like one generative AI tool that they're just like, we just do depositions. Mm-hmm. But I guess Paxton kind of already does exactly what they're saying that their one thing is that they do, if you wanted to use Paxton in that way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that at some point there will be some consolidation within the industry around like all of these tools that are popping up. And I think consolidation is going to happen around the companies that have solved some of the biggest challenges and some of the biggest problem. And the reason why we started with legal research is because legal research is extremely difficult. It's extremely important, but it's also really difficult to do, to collect all of these documents and to create the body of knowledge. So that is not something that is easily replicated. Whereas, you know, some of the other features that we have might be easier, right? Like video transcription, it's not actually that difficult to do from an engineering standpoint.
Right. So I didn't care that much when I read about Paxton, because it's not my practice area, but you've explained to me off interview that it's actually a really phenomenal thing. And that is the SEC Edgar integration. So my practice doesn't touch it, but for like, if somebody's practice does, or if you're, you know, even maybe even if you're just interested in you're not using it as an attorney, but just to ask, query it about whatever public filings are out there. How about for my audience that hasn't heard of Edgar or doesn't use it in their practice, you just, you know, briefly describe what Edgar is and what the SEC or what the Edgar integration with Paxton actually like means for what lawyers and different companies can do.
Yeah, absolutely. So Edgar is the database that the SEC maintains of all public regulatory filings to the SEC. And so there's enormous amounts of information there. It's millions and millions of documents. But some of the really important informations are all of the financial results and financial reporting of publicly traded companies, including their disclosures, including their financial performance. And so in the work that we're doing with a series of firms in the securities practice and capital market practices, they needed us to connect to this large database and be able to query things like, okay, what are the disclosure documents for a franchise restaurant franchise owners? What are their typical risks? But, you know, in the process of doing this, we realize, oh my God, like we have all of this massive amount of information. And so you can go using Paxson and say, hey, let me look at Tesla and let's look at the last 2 years of Tesla. And please tell me, like, what are the unexpected risks that you would see within Tesla, or the or summarize all of the financial performance over, you know, the last 10 quarters of Tesla. Like, Paxson is able to do all of that because the information is there and it's public information. Again, it's unbelievable how much information is publicly available and belongs to the public, but that is not indexed in by search engine, and that is not ingested by large language models. And so we are, little by little, we're just building these connectors, such as Edgar connector for our users. So yeah, whether you are a securities lawyer, capital markets lawyer, or equity analyst, you can now have a large language model query in real time through all of the financial disclosures and regulatory filings for publicly traded companies.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at something right now. Like, I just looked up a publicly traded company that I know a family member works at. I won't say which one. And like seeing their documents, and look, it's just so outside of what I do that, you know, I remember I took a securities law class in law school. So like I kind of remember a Form 8K, but not really, right? But that's the only one that stands out to me of all these different types of forms that have been submitted for this company. So I wouldn't even know where to start. And I think that that brings up the do not pay of it all, right? Of like, right now, you don't need to be a lawyer. Like any Joe Schmo could sign up for Paxson and start querying it, right? But the subject matter expertise will simply be missing, right? And so like, how are you handling though that kind of a thing? Like, I actually wouldn't mind, like personally, I'm a very different kind of lawyer, but personally, I wouldn't mind if like a client had been using a generative AI tool, maybe Paxson, maybe something else, just try to get started and educate themselves maybe about a subject thing and then come to me, because it will maybe save time in the long run, right? So, but I understanding I might be in the minority there. What, like, how are you handling just everyday people signing up for Paxson and using it?
Yeah, I mean, we absolutely want that. And as part of your users, we see regular individuals that are using this tool to do legal research, you know, without saying too much, like in some cases, it might be family law, it might be divorce, it might be, you know, child custody. And it's very similar to like doing these searches and these queries in Google. Like, it's not any different than that. Like, the main difference that is really important to understand is that Paxson is not an attorney. Paxson is a research tool that is used by attorneys. So we make no claims of us being a robot lawyer or anything like that. It is a legal research tool. And, you know, the judgment of an attorney, of a trained professional is absolutely necessary.
Yeah. I could see so much potential here for lawyers to have a tool like Paxson that's also client-facing, where instead of having to one-on-one interface with clients to get them down in a certain direction that might help them out, like I could imagine on Descript of all tools, like doing a screen share, showing them like how to upload a document and query it. Like, is this more in favor of me from company A or the company B who proposed this document, right? And at least like get some questions answered from Paxson first, because frankly, that's probably where I'm going to go with it first. There's no reason my client couldn't start that on the front end. And then I come in and see what questions they've asked and then follow up with it too, right? So like I almost see like the possibility of like as a subscription attorney offering, I mean, the subscription attorney, but there will be more and there are a lot, many, I just claim the title, of like making like access to a tool like this, like a subscription benefit, like to our clients. So instead of them maybe having to sign up for like what random person will sign up for Westlaw or Lexis? Nobody, right? Like you hire a lawyer because you have those because the lawyer has those subscriptions. But a regular person is not going to know how to go into Lexis or Westlaw and like do Boolean, you know, legal research, right? But a tool like Paxson, which is a lot like, you know, your ChatGPTs that a lot of people are using, it's very intuitive and easy to use. And so I could see that as like being a subscription benefit for attorneys who use the subscription models, getting access to these things that now I, the lawyer, can go in and see what my clients have been doing in there and provide the required legal advice or updating the contracts in a way that are appropriate in light of what they've been using with the system. What do you think about something like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I had not thought of it, but it's a certain way in which it can drive value for attorneys, for users. And for me, you know, it's about putting a tool out there helps people. And I mean, I use it all the time, right? Like we had talked about, you know, me trying to understand, like talking about like a speeding ticket or something like that.
And
being able to understand like what are the rulings that are made there, what are past judgments. And so, you know, whether it's this or I had shared as well, trying to make improvements to our home and searching through municipal code for the Department of Planning and Permits, and having this super powerful tool that has access to all of the ordinances with the Planning Commission, and being able to search through thousands of pages of documents and be able to use that myself. And so obviously I'm building a tool where I find use for it myself. So yeah.
And of course that's known as dog fooding, or eating your own dog food. If you at the company are using your own tool, right? It's like everyone at Calendly schedules meetings with prospective users using Calendly, right? They better, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating product. I mean, I could talk about it all day and all the potentials, right? Like there could, I imagine every village manager for like a small town, but with like a code of municipal ordinances that would, if you print it out on paper, would be bigger than the town, would love a tool like this to just for administrative purposes, let alone the people who want to make changes to their homes, right? But it does, like it really for me, and like why I'm having you on the podcast is because when you talk about it like that, it shows me that why, if lawyers are billing their time, little things like that, no one's ever going to hire a lawyer for, right? Like no one's ever going to hire a lawyer to ask about a municipal code thing for building a house because that's already expensive. What are you going to pay $500 an hour to do something like that, or a traffic ticket? You know, but if you have all the law at your fingertips, you don't have to go to a law library, you know, and it's all right there. I mean, the law should be open source. Like, I mean, I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head, but, you know, maybe there needs to be like a government version of Paxton because it's already been trained on all the laws, where like now one of your clients is the U.S. government, where like now it's a, you know, access to justice type, access to legal information type space that is, you know, in part funded maybe by taxpayer dollars that every person gets access to if they go into a courthouse because they need a, you know, have a hearing, you know, on a traffic thing that they've never heard of. You can't get enough pro bono lawyers to sit there, but a tool like Paxton, you know, that's not like do not pay saying we're your robot lawyers. It's just like, we are a resource for you like that. I feel like we kind of need something like that. Have you thought about anything like that or in the pro bono space?
Yeah, I think a lot in analogies. And the analogy that I have here is when I was doing my doctorate at MIT, there's something that happened in scientific research where we used to have to pay very expensive subscription in order to access publications of scientific research that were paid for by tax dollars, right? And so you're saying like, what I don't understand, like this is scientific research that is paid for by tax dollars. The authors are publishing an article. Why do I have to pay this really large amount of money to a publisher in order to access something that is paid for by the public? And I find the similarity just very, very much so with the law, where, you know, the publishing of law or the creation of new laws is paid for by tax dollars, but it's not available to most people and it's very difficult to obtain, but yet it influences our everyday lives. And so it's really important for us to make this available. And that's why we have taken an approach of saying, like, look, you don't need an enterprise subscription. You can just go on Paxton. You can start using it and benefit from it. And my commitment is that there's always going to be a tier where you can have and use Paxton for free in order to benefit from that. And then from there, then, you know, we justify other paying motions, but it's really important for us to be able to make a big portion of the law available to anyone and make it easy.
Yeah, it also makes me think, I'm having an interview tomorrow with Natalie Knowlton of Access to Justice Ventures, and I wonder if there's like opportunity there. So I'll have to tell her about Paxton. She hasn't heard of you guys yet, and see, because they're all about, you know, I mean, it's called Access to A2J Ventures. So even if that's just a side project of Paxton, I see so much potential there.
I can only tell you like how many requests we have for, and it might be like tax codes or resources that are making the tax codes available, or things that might be looking at like 50 state surveys on marriage rights, things like that are really important. So we're having a lot of partnership requests to make this available to others. Other things might be immigration case, right? Like where the law is really important and should be accessible to all almost on a pro bono basis.
Yeah. You know, this is so unlike so many of the interviews that I've had, but I think it was, I'm really happy that you took the time to tell my listeners more about Paxton. I have no vested interest in any of the generative AI tools out there or AI tools for legal. I like a lot of them. I've become friends with some of the founders, but hands down right now, Paxton is my absolute favorite AI tool that I'm using. So again, super thrilled to have you on. I got to ask you the question I ask all my guests, which has nothing to do with what we just talked about, but it's an insight into how you think. And that is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Oh my God. So we actually have a legal definition of what a sandwich is based. And so the answer is it depends based on geographies. So we have, and I'm not sure why you're asking this and whether you know this, but internally to Paxton, there is actually a legal answer on whether a hot dog is a sandwich or not. It does depend in which state. But I encourage all of your listeners to go on Paxton, to select laws, rules, and regulations, to look at the state of New York, and to ask, is a hot dog a sandwich? And the answer is undeniable. And I say in New York, very clearly, the laws, rules, and regulations stated the answer, and I will not give the answer on air, but I will tell you there's a clear answer that will settle the debate.
That might be the absolute best call to action that I've ever had on the podcast for sure. But if that didn't convince my listeners to go try out Paxton, it's paxton.ai. Really easy to go find. Where else can they find you or find Paxton?
You know, until we're at every corner of, I will not stop until we're at every corner of the hot dog food stands in New York City. So yeah, and we'll create a direct link to that you can share with your listeners on Paxton AI. Is a hot dog a sandwich, to make it easier for them to see, so this debate can finally be settled once and for all.
I absolutely love it. If they, you know, are you trying to get like followers on LinkedIn or X or anywhere? Like, do you want people to follow you guys?
Yes, anyplace? Absolutely. Follow us on LinkedIn, Paxton AI. I think that's the best. We're active on X, Twitter as well, Paxton AI. And yes, absolutely. And please find me, reach out. I'm Tongi Chow, or just hello@paxton.ai. That's going to be easier to spell out. Hello@paxton.ai. And I will make sure to respond.
All right, Tongi, thanks so much for coming on the show. And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.